I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Confessions of a Well-Intentioned Preacher. It details how I mistakenly ignored or explained away entire parts of Scripture in order to protect my hearers from legalism. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Lyman Stone writes about the certainty he found in the presence of Christ in his word and sacraments. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Got a computer fits upon my hand. Well, somehow the satellites come just where I am. Must be paranoid or crazy, I guess. To tell you the truth, Lord, it scares me to death.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's there, you can't get rid of it. You can try and get rid of it, but it's always going to be there to one degree or another. You can pare it down. A lot of young people nowadays are saying, why would I want a television that's constantly blaring nonsense to my young kids? They've decided to opt against getting the cable run into the house, and yet they still connect via the internet, and maybe they're more choosy about what they watch, but it's still there, and that's just the big thing on the wall. There's the little thing in your hand or your pocket as well. Basic questions like, when your child starts coveting an iPhone or a smartphone when they're 10, do you give in? You say, no, we'll wait until you're 12. Or is that too early? We're going to be talking about technology in the home, part 19 of our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
So let's start with the basic question, which I think probably most parents are most concerned about. And that is, did I let my daughter or my son have that smartphone too soon? Did I put it in their hands too soon and let them play with it? All those kind of questions about when the technology actually gets into the kids' hands.
Yeah, that I'm not sure I want to give a black and white answer on that. I think on the one hand, the answer is going to be probably. They're probably being exposed to it too soon because that's just the way it is. It's unavoidable, the amount of media that we now have coming our way. Unless you're going to live in a monastery, unless you're going to go the full-on monastic route where you are an ascetic, you are rejecting the entirety of communication medium in our day, they're going to be seeing it, and they're probably going to be seeing it sooner than it would be quote-unquote good for them. On the other hand, part of me wants to react against the almost anti-voodoo, superstitious way that we're reacting against technology, as if somehow, you know, letting a baby play with the screen for a few moments is going to like ruin their life, right? They're a drug addict living on the street now because they watched us play Tetris for too long or something. That's the other side of this. So there's two ways you fall off of this horse, as is often the case, but here all the more. And I think that what I want to advocate and what I'm striving to do, imperfectly, of course, with my own family, is to walk the middle road between them. Neither falling off on the side of indulgence, where I would basically just pretend that it has no effect. It's just a toy. It's like playing with a wooden spoon. Or fall off the other side of total avoidance, a kind of an ostracism, even a legalism, a legality of it, which will have a very strong likelihood of breeding, as legalism often does, a rebellion of its own. Right. And I think of, and this is a little bit of a wives' tale, but I've also seen it anecdotally, that in Europe, drinking is treated very differently than it is in the United States. The drinking age in many places is 18 or even 16, and if you're at home with the family, having a glass of wine from even younger than that, 13 on, with dinner, is something that's sort of just done here and there. It's not a big deal. Here, it's like this this fool's gold. You know, none of it till age 21, but at age 21, we're going to let you go live by yourself with student loans that you can spend, so you have plenty of money, and surround you with a bunch of co-eds who are all getting drunk all the time, and go ahead and, you know, sow your wild oats and all that, right? And we flip it all over to the other side. So there's something to the wisdom of, if it's forbidden fruit, it's certainly got an appeal to it. Whereas if you know it and you've dealt with it and you've experienced it, then it's not so magical anymore. And so finding ways to let our children engage technology, to teach them what the value of that technology is, and sometimes that value is leisure, right? It is time wasting. It is simply relaxation. Sometimes it's other things. To teach them that value while also teaching them the dangers and the hindrances and the pitfalls. Things like addiction. Things like eye strain, right? Things like a sedentary lifestyle, which doesn't allow you to go out and enjoy the life that's right in front of you. All of that has to be taken into account when you ask the question, when do I introduce what to my child? And then recognizing that not all the mediums are the same. They are different things and they do different things. I'm far more likely to let my kid have some experience with a very locked down, limited old iPad that they have to share with their siblings, so they have to learn sharing while they're at it, and it doesn't have internet connection unless I turn it on, then I am going to let them just go full on my MacBook Pro and go surf the web and do whatever, right? I'm not going to let them do that either. So it's about finding that middle way, neither ignorant indulgence that is unaware of the dangers, nor ignorant biased avoidance that's unaware of the tools, right? The value that these new tools bring to us.
Talk a little bit, kind of in the broader sense, about how the technology has and continues to change almost the task of parenting itself. We can, and you have kids that are getting older, starting to venture out of the house on their own. We can now, as parents, know where our kids are without them knowing it, perhaps, if they're carrying one of those devices. There's an expectation of being in contact with one another. I mean, even with my youngest, who still lives at home, when he heads off someplace, it's routine. You know, text us when you get there, text us when you're on your way home. It's not a big expectation, but I don't think my parents ever would have said, call us when you're on your way home. It's just too inconvenient to even make a phone call.
Yeah, stop and put a quarter in the phone, right?
Yeah, so talk about how it's changed parenting, in some ways for the positive, and in some ways toward the negative.
Well, it's all of the above, and you know, it's hard to even sometimes separate the positive from the negative. Your example of the phone and the texting is about as good as one as there is. I was thinking about this on a different level the other day. It was Father's Day, and so we all sat around and we FaceTimed my dad, who's pushing 80 now, and he's still doing okay, but you know, he's getting up there. We FaceTimed him, and then my mom was with him too, and we got as many kids as we could in one shot at a time, and we sat there and we had a good half hour conversation face to face with grandma and grandpa. You know, they live 4 hours away. We see them twice a year usually. And I was thinking about it while that was happening. I was remembering being in high school and having a girlfriend who lived 45 minutes away and having to spend significant amounts of money for me at that age just to be on the phone with her for any amount of time during the week at all, because I had to pay the long distance fees. And what a dynamic change that is in terms of the ability to just pop up the thing, get full video, see my mom in the eyes, right, and have a chat. And then to be able to do that for the grandkids as well, and have that kind of a presence. That's a positive thing that these tools do bring into the world. At the same time, you know, I was talking about the shared iPad. We have about two or three old media devices, iPads, iPhones, that we let the kids use. They kind of are supposed to check them out. They don't belong to anyone, except one of them, she bought her own Kindle Fire, but the other ones, and even her, she has to check it out. They're supposed to ask us before they use it. They're supposed to tell us what they're going to be doing while they use it, and then we limit how much of it they're going to do. What's amazing to me is, like, the biggest thing that happens is they fight over it. You know, they fight over who gets to have it, or what music's going to be playing on Pandora, or that kind of thing. So the fear, of course, too, is that when they're doing those kinds of things, of course, there are places on the internet you don't want them to go. What do you do? I'm tangenting a little bit here, but we've been very, very straightforward with our kids about saying, look, the internet has got stuff on it you don't want to see, because once you see it, you're never going to be able to unsee it. So we want to know where you're going to go. We want to define those parameters. We want to set these limits for your own sake. And there will come a day when you can make your own decisions. And that's our goal, is to get you to that day. But until you're ready for that day, here's the limits that you have. And it's been kind of fun to watch them learn to use the mediums in different ways. So I have one kid who eventually figured out, and mother was working with her on this, figured out how to get drawing lessons, decent, you know, cartoony drawing lessons for free on YouTube. And so she got really into that for a while, and YouTube was teaching her how to draw. The next kid down, just in this last month or so, has done the same thing with origami. And she's coming and dropping these origami things on my desk. That's just, it's just unbelievable. Like, where is this coming from? Well, it's coming from YouTube. That's where it's coming from. And from a kid who's learned to use the technology for good. And yet, if you're not careful, you know, she'll spend 2 hours, 3 hours sitting there with the origami, which isn't necessarily good for the body, right? You should get up and walk around. It's not good for the eyes. There's more to life than just that. I also, and I haven't quite applied this yet, but I think there's something to what I'm going to say here that's worth thinking about. And I heard this from a, I don't know where this was, some tech guy. This was a guy up in, like, he works for Google or somewhere up in that realm, Silicon Valley. And he was talking about his own approach to teaching his son, who is a high school kid, young high school, 14, 15, technology. And he said what he does is he just lets the kid kind of binge on stuff because he knows that he's got enough media ecology on his own that he'll find out how tired he grows of it quickly if he overdoes it. And so he does give him kind of a long leash, recognizing that he'll self-correct over time as he learns to engage it. Now, I'm not quite advocating that approach, certainly not at a young age, but I do think you should give the kid enough leash that they get their feet wet in the pools, I mix my metaphors, and they are not like, they don't see these things as these magical boxes that everybody else gets to see and they don't get to see. Now, that's we've gone a totally different route when it comes to buying them, though. We do not and will not buy our kids a device for themselves and themselves only. And the one child that did buy one, it was mainly for reading books she checks out from the library on it. So the Kindle Fire is a little bit of a different beast. But just handing the kid a phone and saying, you know, this is normal, our kids instead are watching everyone else have that. Not everyone. A lot of other kids have that, and they're having to come home and have other conversations about things like responsibility, about things like having to pay your own bills and being ready to take care of yourself when you get tools for taking care of yourself, those kinds of conversations. But we're not doing it in such a way that they don't know what those things are. Right, they still get to experience what those things are. They get to learn what the tools are. In fact, sometimes it's crazy. You know, I'm not an old man yet. I just turned 40, but I'll have a problem with my phone, and one of my kids will be able to fix it. it's just unreal to be the guy on the other side of that boat watching that happen. As I wander around the answer here, Todd, we're back in the middle, right? We're back between indulgence is a mistake, overshooting, just giving them full leash. That's a mistake. Avoidance, probably also a mistake. Probably also a mistake. The tools have good things to offer. They also have dangers. Each of those is different. And that even goes down on the level, like YouTube has different dangers than Google has, than Facebook has, right? And by the way, Facebook would not be something I'd recommend for most adults, let alone most kids. So anyway, I've wandered long enough. I think I answered your question.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. It's part 19 of our series, Raising Christian Children in an Age of Secular Progressivism. We're talking about technology in the home. He's author of the new book, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again.
Whether you're a man yourself or a woman who cares about the men in your life, you won't want to miss the June issue of The Lutheran Witness. Join John Kleinig, Hans Feeney, Jeffrey Hammer, Broer Erickson, and others in this power-packed issue on men at church as they explore toxic masculinity, godly fatherhood, the religious gender gap, and more. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
The Lord bless us, defend us from all evil, and bring us to everlasting life.
Amen. A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces, the LCMS ministry to the armed forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Do you double tap like me? When I'm on the road, you can Skype me. I'll follow if you follow me back. You my Wi-Fi wifey.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. It's our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. We're talking about technology in the home. Really what we've been discussing here, Jonathan, is first article gifts, as we'd call them as Lutherans, those gifts that God provides for us, including the technology. What's the pastoral approach to things that the gifts are good, but we don't always use them for good?
This is an area of our theology as Lutherans that I think we've gotten weak on. It's not that we don't have it, but it's like we don't remember it or we don't use it. And that is to distinguish between the sinful condition which is in us that has corrupted all things. And so, you know, even roses have thorns, plants die, you know, lions eat animals instead of plants, all that kind of stuff. Right? Everything's shifted by the curse. To distinguish between that and the greater truth, which is that God is still the creator of all of these things, that he still is the sustainer of all of these things. There was a big debate in early Lutheranism over whether or not mankind himself is original sin or simply has original sin in and corrupting our nature. And the reason was because some were trying to emphasize the sinfulness of mankind, rightly so in a sense, by saying we are sin. But then by doing that, you're denying, either you're denying that God is the maker and sustainer of mankind, or you're saying that God is the author of sin, that God is the author of evil. And so it's important to learn from this about the creation itself, that there is nothing in the created world that itself is evil as creation. But it does have and can be abused and have evil uses, right? And so we talked about this when we did the Echo series on authority, that authority is not evil in itself, but evil men will abuse authority for themselves. The same is true, then, of every other thing we receive. Is food good? Yes, of course food is good, but can food be bad? Yeah, food can be really bad, too, right? Are cars good? Of course, cars are a wonderful gift to us. Can cars be bad? Yeah, you know, ask an old man after he's driven for 8 hours straight how his back feels, right? Let alone, you know, somebody who is inebriated and runs into something, right? Cars can be very bad. Alcohol, as I'm bringing up, is another great example. Is alcohol a gift? Well, the Bible seems to say so. It's a gift to gladden the heart of man. And yet, it can also be significantly abused. So that goes for everything in this created order. And so as we come to the question of technology, keeping that in mind, that the technology can't be evil in and of itself. It's impossible because it's a created thing. God is the creator and sustainer of the created order. It can't be evil. Can it be used for evil? Can we abuse it? Can it be used to harm ourselves and others? Absolutely. And that's where then understanding its ecology, its role in the created order, right, how it fits in the environment of our world is imperative to using it rightly. And for that, we're going to rely on the moral teaching of the Ten Commandments, of what wisdom is, of what a right life is, of how to use things for others is. And then we're also going to rely on the first article itself to teach us and or explain to us its use in the context. What do I mean by that? I mean, we're going to acknowledge that science can teach us some truths. It doesn't teach us all truths, but it does teach us some truths. So by observing how technology affects children and having scientific papers on that and doctors studying that, we can actually learn how it affects children, and we can learn how to avoid some of those effects, and we can learn how to make the best use of the best of those effects. Good example here. So there's been a big rush to put iPads and screens, all the way going back to even like TVs being rolled in with the VCR in the 80s when I was a kid, shoving screens into education, shoving screens into classrooms, for everything under the sun, as if the screens themselves are the teaching, right? As if they're the information. In fact, I believe it was in the most recent Apple reveal, might have been the one before it, where there was this big thing where they're going to be donating a bunch of stuff to schools and everyone was making this big deal about it. And yet this goes against what science has regularly shown, which is that video learning by itself is not particularly good at helping you remember anything. It's one thing if, so again, I mentioned my kid, you know, being taught origami by hand, but what's she doing in that moment? She's actually doing origami with her own hands, as opposed to sitting and watching a movie about dolphins, right, versus reading a book about dolphins. Very different things. And then what's going on now with iPad learning in the schools, I can't say I know as much about this on the ground level, but we have things like math levels declining, reading levels declining, and I can guarantee you just throwing technology at it is not going to fix it, right? You have to understand how the technology works if you're going to fix it. And certainly, you're not going to be able to get away with not teaching math. If you want them to learn math, they have to learn math. So understanding what it's good for, letting science as a first article explain some of those things, but then also relying on the wisdom of our Christian understanding, our law and gospel worldview as sort of the foundation that we stand on, while we don't reject the tools, but instead study the tools and rejoice in the tools and use the tools wisely for what they're good for.
Talk a little bit about two facets of the kind of attention distraction problem with the technology. And one of them is simply that the social interaction that it leads to, or the lack thereof. But then also the fact that, and again, the jury's still out on this, this may be changing the way we actually think, the way we use this technology.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question it's changing the way we actually think. I think we're about 50 years too late for worrying about that. It already happened. The TV revolution radically did that to us. And in some ways, I would advocate that the internet is doing one better, because like I said a moment ago, much of the time, it is not only absorbing, there's also an engagement that goes back. So we're definitely having a shift in the way we think. Is it our attention spans? Maybe. It more likely, in my mind, is along the lines of memory and logical thinking, the logical progression of a thought. A book forces you to follow one man's thinking for a bit of time, right? You must follow sentence to sentence, and they build upon each other. It's very structured. On the internet, I can dance around. You know, I get bored and I flip to something new and I click a link and here I am and bam and boom, right? So it's, I guess that is attention span, but I'm gonna say it's really not. It's logical progression. It's the ability to think about a topic for longer than it's exciting. You know, being able to move through boring things and find the information in them anyway. That's the bigger challenge right there. the first part of your question I've now forgotten, but I really liked it. Can you ask me what the first part of your question
is? Well, talk about the social interaction that where we have this strange interaction of an attention on the device that isn't, I don't even know what to call it. It isn't attention, but it leads to a distraction with others.
Yeah, isn't it amazing that you can be sitting there with someone who you care about a great deal and the phone means more to you than they do? And you watch this with your kids, it's even worse because they don't have any type of filter or higher self-awareness to even ask the question, you know, what do I look like right now? How am I treating others around me right now? Most kids are not anywhere near that. And then you have, not only are they studying this, those who are developing these items, they're doing this on purpose. They're recognizing that the human mind is attuned to look for certain kinds of things. And they always put this in the language of evolution. They'll say something like, we evolved to be walking through the forest, yada, yada. Ignore the evolution part of it and just come to the God designed us. God designed us to be, and the rest of the story makes sense, to be walking through the forest looking for food. And as we look for food, certain things are food and certain things are not food. And the things that are food are brightly colored. Apples, oranges, cherries, berries, right? That's the kind of thing we're supposed to go eat. And those bright colors draw the eye and they hold our attention. The other thing that we now, post-fall, are designed to do is be aware of danger. So what else are we looking for? We're looking for movement. And when we see movement, we watch it, right? Our eyes get stuck on it. So you go to a restaurant with your kids and you sit down at the farthest corner of the restaurant from the TV and you're almost guaranteed all kids' heads while you're talking with your wife are turned across the restaurants to look at the TV. Why? Because it's moving. And it's brightly colored. It's on purpose, right? This is on purpose to get our attention and draw us in. It's a phenomenal challenge to our social culture. You know, how do we learn to put down the distraction? And this is where, you know, indulgence versus avoidance and a middle ground of where you would try to say there are times where I don't look at my phone. And those times are socially and in an etiquette way when someone else is talking to me or when we're at the dinner table together. We try in our family, we try very hard not to bring our phones to the dinner table until someone asks a Google question. And then that's after we've eaten and we go get the Google and we answer the question and we go back to talking. But it's not a time to sit and just sort of go off on your own. Unless you do something intentional about that, though, I'm not sure that there's any fixing it because we are kind of primed to just fall headfirst into these things. And I know you've had this experience where you think, I'm going to go into my phone to check on this. 20 minutes later, you put the phone down. You didn't do the one thing you went to go do. You did 15 other things, right? Because you just got distracted by notifications and pop-ups and all this other stuff there, right? Again, this is all on purpose by the developers because they make money by having you use their stuff. And so they're trying to draw your mind in, unless you're making a concerted effort to fight back on that, to limit those things, to turn off your notifications, to set the phone aside and not go back into it. It is going to be something that just kind of takes over the mind, doubly so for a child who has no filter and no defense system at all, which again is why I think you don't just wait until they're adults and then they go off and fall headfirst into it. You've got to begin engaging technology with them and then talking about these very things. Look, here are the pitfalls. Here are the problems. Look, see how they're doing that for you to you on purpose. Same thing. We've talked about this before, Todd, you know, with commercials, right? You're watching commercials with the kids. Turn off the sound and just watch the commercial and ask your kids, you know, in the middle of whatever show you're watching, ask your kids. So let's figure out what they're trying to tell us on the pictures. What are they trying to sell us? First one to get it wins, right? The cars are easy, but go with everything else. What are they trying to sell us? What are they trying to tell us about that thing? What kind of colors are they using? How fast is the screen moving? See how they're trying to manipulate you, right? And the more that you teach them to understand that, the more they're going to be able to engage it in a healthy way, because maybe the commercial is actually selling something that's good for them and they really should go and get, right? You don't want to turn yourself off to the communication of the outside world, but you don't want to be a stooge either, yeah?
We're talking with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, our series Raising Christian Children in an Age of Secular Progressivism about technology in the home. He is author of the new book, Echo, Unbroken Truth, worth repeating again. Here's a tweet that we received from Rachel about the book. Echo by Pastor Fisk has helped to reflect on faith and prayer in a way that gave me answers to some of the theological questions I had. 10 out of 10 recommend, says Rachel. Shout out to Issues, Etc. for all the advertising that encouraged me to buy the book. book in the first place. You can find out more about Pastor Jonathan Fisk's latest book called Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again, or just Pastor Fisk's latest book, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, we're going to talk about when it's time to just turn everything off.
From telly, what to think and what to buy. Now I was pretty smart already, but now I'm really, really smart, very, very smart. Endless content, endless channels, endless chat on endless panels.
I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Confessions of a Well-Intentioned Preacher. It details how I mistakenly ignored or explained away entire parts of Scripture in order to protect my hearers from legalism. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Lyman Stone writes about the certainty he found in the presence of Christ in his word and sacraments, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How was school today, kids?
Crazy! Hector's charioteer got hit by a stone, and his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet.
Sounds like Patroclus was being hot-tempered, rude, and quarrelsome again.
He always is. Dad, what's for supper?
I don't know yet. Supper is such a problem.
If it's a problem, you can use the scientific method to figure it out.
Problem? We want supper. Hypothesis? I think Dad will make tacos.
Actually, I was thinking about spaghetti.
Tacos or spaghetti?
False dichotomy.
Is this the after-school conversation of your dreams? Registration is now open for the 2018-19 school year at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area.
Hey, Dad, how did my violin practice sound?
Kiddo, it sounded epic.
Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org. school.stpaulhamel.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about technology in the home, part of our series on raising Christian children in an age of secular progressivism. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. I'm going to make a suggestion. I wonder what you think about it, kind of explore the ins and outs of it with only about 3-4 minutes left to us here, Jonathan. What about a night in which everything gets turned off? And I'm not just talking about putting it over there on the table, but leaving it on, but just say, hey, family, we're going to turn it all off tonight and act as though it doesn't exist.
I love the idea. My wife and I recently were able to get away for about 6 days together near a beach. And one of the things we did sort of just accidentally was we didn't use electricity after the sun went down. We just went with candlelight. And it was marvelous. It was, I shouldn't say no electricity. I mean, we used the gas stove to cook dinner by candlelight. And if we had to turn the light on briefly, we did, right? But the goal was just being quiet. And not in nature so much, but in a calmer, remember a calmer time and see if we could feel a calmer life. And it was a marvelous thing. And we've talked about doing that here. We haven't yet had quite a full night like that yet, although we have tried to go to some candlelight after 8 o'clock, even when the kids are still getting ready for bed, and just toning down everything that's going on around us. And, you know, science supports this as well. The studies now are showing that the blue light that's in all of our electronic devices, from your screen to the light bulbs in your bathroom, it messes with your sleep patterns, not only in terms of your rhythm and when you should go to bed and when you should wake up, but in terms of the kind of sleep that you're getting. So there's good reason to think about this kind of thing. But at the same time, you also have to fit it into where you actually are, and you don't want to be legalistic about it either. So I think you want to make sure that, let me say it this way, you want your default position to be the devices are off. I think that's pretty important. Default, it's not open and on all the time just because. You know, the TV is not the fifth or the sixth or the seventh member of the family. With that then, you want to have safe spaces, right? The dinner table. When you're eating together as a family, put it all away. Don't even have it available. If it buzzes, it can wait 15 minutes. It really can, in all likelihood. If someone's dying, they'll call you on the phone, on the real phone, right? So have some place every day that you can indeed create that space for human interaction and for real conversation. And then, like you said, Todd, I mean, I love that idea. What night of the week it would be? I mean, it's tough because for us, a big family night is a movie night, so it wouldn't work for that. But maybe, you know, maybe it's the night that you would barbecue. Sunday afternoon, you're all going to kind of be outside a little bit anyways. When you come inside, just do candles and go to bed, right? And see how the quiet feels. We're a little bit afraid of it, honestly, as a culture and as a people. We're a little bit afraid of it. But it's a wonderful, mellow step back, and I think you'll be surprised at how much you enjoy it. Not to say you don't want to use these tools for what they're good for, right? That's not the idea either. So you got a minute here you want to respond to that. I'm curious for more of your thoughts.
No, I just want your final thoughts here with about 30 seconds. And that is, if you had to say, hey, when am I going to let my teenage son have his first smartphone? What would your gut tell you
now,
30 seconds?
Yeah, when he can buy it himself. This is that easy. You know, when you save up the money, you buy it yourself, then we'll talk about the rules you get to follow as you own it. That's simple.
I like that answer. That's a really good answer. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. Paul Lutheran Church in Rockford, Illinois, and host of a radio talk show called Sharper Iron. He's author of the new book, Echo, Unbroken Truth, Worth Repeating Again. Jonathan, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
In hour two of Issues Etc., it's time to talk to Mark Tooley about we can call it a evolution of sorts from old liberal Protestantism that was stuck in modernism. It rejected Christianity and most of what Christianity claims on account of modernism, to a new progressive Christianity rooted in postmodernism. Oddly enough, they end up with just about the same message. Then we'll spend some time talking with Lyman Stone about U.S. immigration policy being called ethnic cleansing.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilken and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page. Or call me, Dr. Jay Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.